You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hi, and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. I'm Sarah Custer, and today we'll be exploring some of the data that we collect throughout the year for our World University Ranking. As you probably know, we produce a series of rankings annually based on a variety of institutional groupings like subject matter, geography, age. And in creating those rankings, we collect a massive amount of data, which our data editor, Simon Baker, and our data team then analyze to find some pretty fascinating stories about higher education around the world. This week, we'll be looking at undergraduate enrollments in STEM programs by gender, which is always a hot topic as everyone endeavors to increase the number of women in these fields. But what we've seen is that universities in the Gulf have a much higher proportion of female STEM undergraduates than anywhere else in the world. Here's Simon Baker to tell us more. Simon, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Yeah. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Yeah.
Thanks for joining me today.
Okay, no problem.
You've done a great analysis of STEM enrollments worldwide, as you always do. You do a data analysis for us weekly for the magazine.
Yeah.
So this week you're looking at STEM enrollments in higher education worldwide.
That's right. Yep. So it's been quite an interesting piece of work that we've done. It was helped by our data team that work on the World University Rankings. Mm-hmm. And because part of the rankings, what we do for the universities, we rank, there's about 1,000 of them. We collect lots of additional sort of data about each university. And that includes sort of enrollments by sort of male and female students.
Mm-hmm.
So the data team did some analysis where they looked at sort of enrollment of male and female students in different subject areas. So because we have different subject rankings, you can we have to collect the data for enrollments by subject area. You can look at sort of each subject, say that's a STEM subject or arts and humanities, for all the subject rankings that we have. And then you can look at the proportion of male undergraduates and female undergraduates, and that can give you a kind of a picture not only for universities across the world but actually for countries, because you can take the rank universities and look at how it differs for each country. You can look at the proportion of kind of say male or female students that are studying different subjects in each country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our own data.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it quite interesting.
Yeah, and unique.
And yeah, exactly. And it's international. That's the kind of point you can really look at. I suppose the one kind of caveat to mention is that whenever we look at this data, we're looking at ranked universities, and this goes for all the data we do of our own, which means it's the top 1,000. You know, you're only looking at the sort of top research universities in the world. So you're not always looking at every higher education everywhere. So you have to sort of bear that in mind. But what the data team found is that by looking at female enrollments, this is undergraduates, by subject, you notice a really interesting trend whereby if you look at the sort of rich Western nations, it's well known there's a real problem with the amount of female undergraduates that study STEM subjects, well, not just undergraduates, postgraduates as well. So especially in subjects like engineering or computer science, getting more women to study those subjects is a debate that's had in America. It's in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
It's across Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at, and this is sort of data that shows up in this rankings by subject, these statistics as well, you find that countries like, even like Sweden, where you'd think there's more gender equality, and other countries in Europe like Denmark and the UK, for computer science, say, as an example, they all hover around 20% for the proportion of female students studying that subject. Engineering's a bit different. Sweden does a bit better. You're looking at more like 25%. But then when you, and Switzerland does a bit better actually as well when it comes to engineering. But when you look at countries, say, in the Gulf states, and we plotted this information against sort of wealth and of a country, and they jump out as well because obviously they're quite wealthy. If you look at GDP per person, then you'll see that countries like the UAE, Qatar, Kuwait, Oman, in Saudi Arabia as well, their proportion of girls studying STEM subjects is far higher. So if you look at, say, and the graphs that we published, you can look at them online. If you look at computer science, so you're looking at more like sort of 50% to 60% in some of these countries. Engineering, Saudi Arabia doesn't actually do so well. It's more like the kind of Western nations. But again, the Gulf states are more kind of up towards 40 to 50%.
Just to break that down, so mostly in countries that we associate gender parity with, like the Nordic countries, as you mentioned, Sweden, Denmark, there tend to be enrollments hovering around 20% of female undergraduates in these STEM programs. But then whenever we look at societies and countries where we don't necessarily associate gender parity, like Saudi Arabia, UAE, Oman, that's whenever we start to see higher percentages of female undergraduates on these STEM courses.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I've sort of compared Western nations with those countries there. And I put in a couple of extra ones as well. Just I put China in as well, give you a bit of context.
And China sits about 20%.
Yeah,
as well.
I mean, it's not actually very sort of high in China either. Yeah. But it's just very interesting if you look at kind of, you know, liberal democracies, basically, in the West, where you'd think there was kind of freedom of choice, really, for women to study whatever subject they want. There's still this problem where they really don't study STEM subjects. But if you look at kind of these Gulf states where a lot of the time, you know, you're not talking about democracies at all, and there's just a really high proportion of women studying STEM subjects. So there has been some research that has been done by some academics where they looked at other societies where there was kind of less gender parity, or less gender equality, and they did find that there was this kind of paradox almost, because between countries where there were more, it was more liberal but less women studied STEM, and those where there were more restrictions on women, what women can do in day-to-day life, but more of them were studying STEM subjects, which is kind of strange, really, when you think about it.
We've covered that, the gender paradox, in a few pieces on THE now.
And
one of the things they do say is that women are not studying these fields, perhaps, and they're going more into the humanities. Perhaps it's because they're doing really well in all of the subjects, and it just so happens that they are choosing the strongest subjects, which happen to be reading and writing. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not as strong as their male counterparts in, like, elementary school in those fields, like math, science, engineering. Well, engineering not in secondary school. But, yeah, those more STEM-type subjects whenever they're younger. It just happens that they choose the one that they tend to excel at.
Yeah, I think, and that's what these researchers, I mean, we covered this before, but there was a paper by a researcher at the University of Missouri and another academic from Leeds Beckett University that looked at this trend, and they kind of were, you know, they were suggesting that almost in the liberal democracies, then girls were kind of moving more towards what they felt were their strengths. But like you say, a lot of the focus about on this subject and the debate in the West is often that you're kind of, it starts very young and in kind of elementary school, where maybe girls think that they're kind of not good at maths and they're not encouraged in that direction when they're just as good at boys at maths. But because of the way society sort of set up in some ways and the kind of stereotypes about gender roles, maybe they kind of move towards thinking that's what that's their strength, so and then later on they study what they're good at, and that's what their interest is.
Right.
That's what the researchers sort of thought was the kind of reason for that sort of paradox.
Right.
But the reason, obviously, the other side of the coin is, why do so many women study these subjects in the Gulf states?
Right. And what did you find whenever you were speaking with people?
So, I mean, it's a fascinating area. You can really get kind of you can sort of delve into it a lot more than I did, but from speaking to some people that kind of have expertise in the area, you know, it seems that to a certain extent, I mean, the Gulf and the Middle East, sort of generally, there are kind of quite entrenched kind of cultural sort of stereotypes about HE generally that are kind of not going to change overnight. So it's generally thought that, you know, if you don't study sort of science or you don't study medicine, then, you know, other subjects kind of maybe aren't as worthy.
So that cultural stigma exists.
About studying other sort of subjects. And kind of what it was suggested to me was that, you know, this exists for kind of girls as well, so that their career path is almost sort of determined sort of for them by parents, by teachers, by the sort of job market as well, into thinking that really, you know, STEM is what they should be studying. And so that therefore that's the kind of direction that a lot of girls go in from a sort of an early age, and then they'll study that at university as well. And what's really interesting is that if you compare that with how many graduates go on and work in sort of STEM fields, I mean, there's suggestion, if you look at some of the, I didn't have direct data on sort of employment by sort of subject area, for instance, but the evidence is that, you know, women in the workforce, I mean, the proportion just plummets.
Yeah, so there are fewer women working in STEM fields after they graduate.
Yeah.
And you found an interesting piece of research that you pull out in your article, just looking at the number of female professors in these STEM fields in these regions.
Yeah, there was a really interesting paper that was published in the World Journal of Education by Samira Islam, who's actually a kind of a bit of a trailblazer for women in STEM in the Middle East. It was one of the very early first PhD graduates from Saudi Arabia for a woman, and she wrote this very interesting kind of paper in this journal that looks at the current state of sort of enrollment in STEM subjects across the Middle East for women, and sort of says, look, it's really high, but why aren't they going to work in kind of these fields afterwards? Because actually, this is a rich talent pool that we're not using. You know, this is the future of the Middle East if we use these graduates to actually work. But you know, what she says is that you need to remove the barriers that hinder women from working in the areas, and these are kind of cultural kind of problems, really. You know, she says that in principle there are equal opportunities for both genders in many Arab states. However, one of the greatest impediments that prevent women from joining the workforce is flanked by culture, religion and industry needs, along with the absence of solid and practical anti-discrimination policies. She features some figures in this paper about the number of sort of female professors there are in Gulf states. She's actually sort of, it was, the data was actually for university teachers, so I don't know if it was necessarily the professoriate, but you know, if you look at the kind of those countries, then only in Tunisia and Lebanon, I think, only there where there were about half of the lecturers were female. But some of the Gulf states that we were talking about before, where you've got very high proportion of female undergraduates in STEM subjects, then overall sort of proportion of university teachers are much lower in the UAE. I think it was more like 30-40%.
Yeah, so we're looking at UAE teaching professors, it's sitting just above 30%. But then when you look at UAE computer science students, that's sitting right at about 80%.
Yeah, so on our data, yeah.
Yeah, and there's definitely a leak in the pipeline somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So they're clearly not going on to become academics at the same rate, really. So it's almost like they study a bachelor's equivalent sort of degree, they're undergraduates. That's it.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of them don't then go on to sort of use that either for work or continue in postgraduate education.
Another interesting comment that I found whenever I was doing some research on this topic was that an explanation that people choose these STEM fields in certain countries where there might not be the economic prosperity as the same as there is in the US or the UK and other European countries, but maybe in countries like Turkey or some of the Gulf regions. And they choose them just because they know that they have a better opportunity of getting jobs in those fields.
Yeah.
Whether you're a woman or not, and whether you continue to go on there doesn't really matter. But it could be that women are looking to these as just less of a high-risk degree because there's probably more of an opportunity. And STEM fields, no matter what country you're in, they tend to provide greater graduate outcomes than humanities. Yeah. So it's just of a less of a risk. Whereas if you're in Sweden or the UK, then you're probably more likely to get a job with a humanities degree.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's probably, and I think it was pointed out to me that men in the sort of Middle East states, it's not maybe not so important what they study because they expect to get employed in a lot of public sector jobs, for instance, which is what one academic who's an expert in the region said to me.
That's great, Simon. Thanks very much for your expert analysis on this.
No problem.
We'll have you back again to talk more data very soon.
Yep. No, it's always a pleasure to talk about.
I also spoke with Natasha Ridge, an education researcher and executive director of the Al Qasimi Foundation for Policy Research in the UAE, to hear her thoughts about this trend and if institutions in Western countries could learn from Gulf universities.
Historically in the Gulf, there's never been a prejudice against women or men doing particular subjects. So in schools, there's segregated education with girls' schools and boys' schools. And within those schools, both boys and girls are encouraged to pursue whatever subjects that they enjoy doing. So there hasn't been that sort of, I guess, ingrained idea that boys are good at math and, you know, girls are good at reading. It's just been that actually girls are, because they're being educated alone, they're encouraged across the curriculum. So I think that's one big factor. Also within the Middle East itself and the Gulf as well, the sciences are held in very high esteem. So there's always been this idea that, you know, a very good good career to pursue for both men and women has been engineering, and that's always been very consistent. Engineering, medicine in particular, those two fields. So the sciences in particular have always been highly prized in ways that I don't think it has been so commonplace across the West. And this is highly prized across different socioeconomic classes. So I think that's played a big part. And I guess finally, the governments have also spent a lot of time promoting women's participation, not only in the sciences, but in education in general and continuing their education and being leaders of tomorrow. So there's been a big push and support from government.
Do you think this encouragement to study science comes at the sacrifice of humanities, or is it equal?
No, I think that's exactly the point. That's what I wanted to say. It is far more valued than the humanities. So I think that actually what we see here is almost the flip side of what you would see in the UK, for example, where we have far more students interested in the sciences or in business, for example, but not so many interested in the humanities or in the sort of more classics, you know, like philosophy or even the sciences such as psychology is very understudied. So and let alone literature and art and all those sort of things, which are even more neglected. So we have a lot of, you know, science graduates on our hands, but we don't have so many of the arts and humanities that I think we need for a balanced society.
We're comparing this to statistics that we have for universities in the UK, in the US, and Nordic countries that are traditionally societies that have more gender balance. Do you think that, whereas compared to Gulf countries, there's less of that, do you think this comes into play at all into why there could be more females studying science and STEM fields?
I don't think it plays a massive role. I think in terms of the measures as well of gender equality, I do a lot of research looking at males, is my background, but I've looked at different measures, including the World Economic Forum measures. But a lot of them sort of privilege, I guess, Western notions of gender empowerment, in particular the empowerment measure. I mean, there are things, for example, like the measures look at education, in which the Gulf does very well. They look at health, life expectancy, which women do very well in the GCC as well, comparable. But I think when it comes to the measure of empowerment, and that's often termed in, say, political participation, which, you know, these regions, you know, there's issues with participation that a lot of these measures don't like. But also, I think it doesn't always capture women's empowerment fully within the societies here. So I think also these measures themselves probably don't do full justice to the region. I think in areas of maternity leave, I think that having more maternity leave would make a big difference. I think that's one area where I think women's participation in general would increase, not just in the STEM fields, but in general, if there was more maternity leave available here. I think that would be one big area.
What is the maternity leave in general in the Gulf?
It's just changed recently to 3 months.
3 months, okay. So presumably, if we've got so many female STEM students compared to other countries in the world, presumably there would be more females working in STEM fields whenever they graduate in STEM careers. Is that the case?
I think it's a growing, that is increasing. I mean, we have in the Gulf a situation where there's a heavy reliance on expatriate workers in general. So you have no more than 20% of the population, especially in the UAE, is actually in the labour force. There is nationals working in the labour force. So they're very small percentage of the labour force in general. In terms of women's participation, more and more women are participating. Those ones who are graduating from STEM fields, they are going into STEM careers. But there is also a preference for public sector jobs or jobs working for government-owned entities. So that sort of, again, limits the choices that women have. And I think for women, another barrier is they're less mobile than men. So typically, if they're not married, they have work near to where their family is. And then if they are married, then, again, they would probably have to work near the family home again. So whereas men in the UAE are much more mobile, so they're able to live in one emirate and work in another emirate and commute back and forth, whereas women, it's changing, but at the moment we find that there's a bit of a lack of mobility for women, so that does limit some of their choices. And then there is also the preference not to work when women get married and to focus on a family, and I think it's important also to acknowledge that that's a choice too, not because of a barrier to entry, but a personal preference.
And do you think, because there's such a high number of women studying STEM fields at the undergraduate level, then I guess that means where are the men? Should there be a concern now that there are fewer men studying STEM degrees in the Gulf region?
Yes, I thought about that too. I think there's a general concern that there are fewer men going into higher education. I think that's like probably a bigger concern, especially given the small percentage of nationals in the workforce. I don't think it needs to be particularly a focus on STEM because, as we've talked about, it comes at an expense of other, very enriching careers and enriching degrees. So I think that, yes, it's good to have male participation in STEM subjects as well, but I think it's just generally good to have equal numbers of males and females participating in higher education.
I know you're an education specialist, so I'm going to ask you this. Why are there fewer men going into higher education?
Many reasons, but mainly I think at the heart of it is this real, there's a disconnect between that men perceive or boys perceive as a disconnect between the labour market and further education. So there is, they still don't see how further education will really benefit in the labour market. They think that they'll just be able to get a job. And although this has changed and although this is no longer the case, actually, in the past you could easily get a job in the military or in the police or these kind of careers. They don't exist so much anymore, but that hasn't yet filtered down to younger generations. And I think the other problem is that school is so demotivating, especially public schools for young men, that they actually really dislike education. So there's not that, there hasn't been a very pleasant experience with education, and certainly not one they want to continue. And then they don't perceive that there is a return to education, even though research we've done has shown that there is actually a higher return on higher education for men than for women. So actually, rationally, it would make a lot more sense. So a big part of our work is to help young men understand this in order to continue their education.
Increasing female students is one of the top goals of many universities in many countries in the Western world. Is there anything you think that they could learn from the Gulf countries that appear to be achieving this quite well?
I think it's just making places welcoming environments. I think one thing they have done well is to make campuses for women very, friendly to women, very accommodating to women and the different things that they need, whatever they may be specifically. But I think they're felt as safe spaces. I think not having, professors and faculty who really believe in you and motivate you, I think that's all part and parcel of it. But I think, to be honest, I think the Gulf has benefited really just from this sort of a real hunger for women to go on to education. They really enjoy that. They really enjoy studying. They have a positive thing about studying, not just for getting a job, but they also really, we did, Collective Mind did a recent study on Saudi Arabia where actually the women pursued higher education because they were just interested in bettering themselves. So I think for Western countries, I think the challenge really lies in the schools. How is it that we get students from maybe less privileged backgrounds to think about higher education as an option rather than to think that that's just something that somebody from another class does? How is it that we make it more accessible to all sort of to more working class students or lower SES students?
Natasha, can you just tell me finally what you're working on right now at the Akasimi Foundation?
At the moment we're working on a study on father involvement and the impact of father involvement on education and career choices and sort of on life trajectory. And we're also doing a lot of work on philanthropy and education, and mainly in the region, but also globally, and what are the patterns and how is philanthropy transforming or impacting education around the world.
So father involvement in both genders of students' lives and how that
Yes.
impacts their educational journey.
Yes, exactly. So we look at males and females, adults, and ask them about their father involvement experiences. And then, yeah, it's very, that's a study of 10 Middle Eastern countries where we've actually found that women have had far more positive experiences with their fathers, and it's played a very important role in them continuing their education and their career choices as well.
Wow, fascinating. Well, we look forward to seeing the results of that. Thanks so much, Natasha.
And that was Natasha Ridge from the Al-Qassimi Foundation. Thanks for listening. You can find Simon's full analysis of this data as well as other THE podcasts by going to our website, timeshighereducation.com. And if there's anything you'd like us to discuss here, as always, drop me a line at sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.